Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, April 8th, 2024. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, City of Champaign, mental health co-responders hiring on table. They'd assist police with crisis intervention where appropriate. This article is written by Jana Wiersema. That's J-W-I-E-R-S-E-M-A at newsgazette.com. The story is based out of Champaign. Over the past 5 years, the Champaign Police Department has responded to 80,251 calls for service that had the potential to include a mental or behavioral health component, according to Rachel Joy, the city's director of equity and engagement. This includes nearly 2,600 for the year to date as of March 11th. Some of these calls, such as crisis intervention, suicidal threats and attempts, and intoxicated subject calls, are inherently tied to a person in crisis, Joy wrote in a report to the Champaign City Council. However, many other call categories frequently include mental or behavioral health concerns that cannot be identified until an officer is on scene and able to assess the situation. By October of this year, however, it might not just be a police officer who arrives at the scene. A new model for mental health emergency response process hiring a licensed clinical social worker to lead a co-responder division of the city's equity and engagement department, along with four co-responders to go out on calls. City administration are seeking direction from council members on whether to proceed with implementation of the proposed model. The matter will be discussed at tonight's study session. This program would expand the current approach taken by the Equity and Engagement Department in coordination with first responders and build out a formal response focusing on mental health, behavioral health, and social crisis calls, Joy wrote, describing the latter as a crisis brought forth by a societal injustice, such as discrimination, being unhoused, or displaced due to a disaster. She added that creating this new division would allow first responders to focus on calls that require police or fire personnel, while also helping direct individuals in crisis to the resources they need. City staff also hope to see the program lead to fewer calls for service over time. It is proposed that the four co-responders would be assigned to different shifts to provide 24/7 response, Joy said. They would have the option to arrive in separate vehicles from first responders and would need to wear identifiable clothing so that they are easily recognized by police, firefighters, and members of the public. First responders will clear a scene after assessing all safety concerns to allow the co-responders to lead efforts and provide necessary services, Joy wrote. Co-responding staff will use only non-coercive techniques such as de-escalation with no force during interactions. She added that co-responders would also respond to non-emergency calls that potentially require their services. When not dealing with calls for service, they would be expected to work on community outreach, education, and engagement. There will be instances where the division would respond without police or fire, Joy told the News Gazette. For example, specific calls for service may not be an emergency requiring a first responder, but does require someone from the division to address a mental or behavioral health crisis. Additionally, the social worker would provide essential support to police, fire, and MetCAD personnel after traumatic incidents, Joy wrote in her report to the council. Implementation of the response model is estimated to cost the city about $915,000 in the first year, and $617,000 on an annual basis thereafter, she said. Expenses would be paid out of the city's general fund. Recurring costs include about $7,600 for vehicle expenses, $141,000 for the licensed clinical social worker, $455,900 for the four co-responders, and $12,000 for training. One-time costs for the first year include roughly $109,800 for vehicles, $6,500 for equipment, $32,000 for furniture and build-out, and $150,000 for a support services fund for immediate needs. Assuming the council is in favor of the proposal, next steps would include developing standard operating procedures and policies, hiring personnel, identifying office space for new division, and meeting with local resource providers to coordinate service delivery and identify any gaps that might exist, Joy said. It's estimated that the co-responder division could be fully staffed, trained, and ready to begin going out on calls by September 30th. At present, the Champaign Police Department utilizes a crisis intervention team model, which provides training and resources to improve interactions with people having a behavioral health crisis, Joy said. Police officers also have the ability to call Rosecrans for advice on how to deal with these situations, but otherwise have very few options for resolving the crisis or referring the individual for other resources, Joy said. Opportunities for Rosecrans to assist on scene are very limited, she said. Currently, Rosecrans plans to open a crisis triage center that would operate 24/7 and be available for individuals experiencing a behavioral or mental health crisis. Rosecrans is in the process of meeting with community stakeholders to discuss collaboration. According to Joy, the project is federally funded and tentatively expected to open in October. When asked what would happen to the current model if the mental health co-responder program is approved, Joy replied that the latter would serve as lead for all mental and behavioral health calls for Champaign Police. While the proposed mental health co-responders would be a new addition for the city, Joy noted that the Equity and Engagement Department has been able to test a co-responder model through its Justice Victim Advocates, which are part of the department's Community Safety and Justice Division. The advocates coordinate on calls related to gun violence, specifically, and as stated in the report, also work directly with the fire department on residential fires, she told the News Gazette. First responders assess the scene to determine when the advocates arrive. At the present time, they are not showing up on direct mental health calls, but instead have been available on a limited basis to provide support and follow-up as referred through other city departments, she added. There is a chart, diagram, or graph that accompanies this article. And the title of the graph is CPD Mental and Behavioral Health Care for Services by Year. Here's what the caption says about that chart. Over the past 5 years, the Champaign Police Department has responded to 80,251 calls for service that quote-unquote had the potential to include a mental or behavioral health component, according to Rachel Joy, the city's director of equity and engagement. That image, that graphic, is provided. At newsgazette.com, what say you? Let us know by submitting a letter to the editor online. Next up is a photograph and headline. It's a lot of people kind of in a social gathering. And the photo is provided by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. The headline reads, Wearing of the Green. The caption reads, Carrie and Ann Jones show off their t-shirts with a photo of Illinois women's basketball coach Shauna Green on the front. A packed house was on hand for Green's appearance on Monday's WDWS radio program at the Esquire Lounge in Champaign. I believe that was on Monday. The next headline reads, Champaign County Court, Urbana man gets 50 years for murder he claims not to recall. This article is by Luke Taylor, that's LTAYLOR, at newsgazette.com. The story is based out of Urbana. An Urbana man has been sentenced to 50 years in prison for a 2022 murder he says he doesn't remember committing. Matthew Denbo, 45, was found guilty but mentally ill in the shooting of his friend Joshua Berg while walking in Campustown. During his September 2024 trial, Denbo, that's D-E-N-B-O, said he could remember events leading up to and following the shooting, but that he blacked out at the time of the actual shooting. Denbo's attorney at the time, James Long, emphasized that his client's multiple diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, apparently stemming from his military service, was having an effect on his behavior and possibly making him believe unreasonably that he was being threatened. But at Denbo's sentencing, Assistant State's Attorney Chris McCollum, M-C-C-A-L-L-U-M, called that argument into question. McCollum said that Denbo was essentially blaming the military for his own actions while continuing to drink alcohol and, at least on the day of the shooting, skip taking his medication. McCollum also said that from his own U.S. Army service, he could interpret Denbo's military record and found a record of a man who was a non-combat mechanic with an on-and-off substance abuse problem. How he got an honorable discharge is beyond my belief because he has served, but there's nothing honorable about his actions whatsoever, McCollum said. On behalf of Mr. Berg's family, McCollum requested a life sentence. McCollum was not the prosecuting attorney in Denbo's trial. Denbo is also no longer represented by the same defense attorney as he was during trial. Matthew Chivari, C-H-I-V-A-R-I, Chivari, Denbo's current lawyer, pushed back on McCollum's characterization of his client's military service and said that records show Denbo was in active service in Kyrgyzstan and Afghanistan during Operation Enduring Freedom. Chivari also recounted a story of how Denbo apparently volunteered for his second tour in Afghanistan to take the place of another soldier who had recently had a child. Regardless of the exact nature of his service, Chivari said Denbo had still been diagnosed with PTSD by multiple professionals and had been affected in some way. Regardless of an active or inactive service member's responsibility, I think we as citizens of this country owe a great deal of respect to anybody, Chivari said. So representations that an inactive duty member did nothing, I think, communicates a level of disrespect to the military. Chivari didn't suggest an exact length for a sentence, but requested it be appropriately lenient, quote unquote. Mr. Berg's family shared their impact statements at a previous hearing. Mr. Berg's sister, Tracy Skaggs Berg, was killed in 1987 in her home in Guam, where she lived with her husband, who was arrested for the murder in 2014. Mr. Berg's brother died in July 2024, with his wife saying he had been depressed after Mr. Berg's murder. At Friday's sentencing, Denbo's brother and a friend both spoke to his character, saying that he was a kind man who always tried to help others out, though he would sometimes act differently when upset. His fishing buddy, who also knew him from his work at a liquor store, said it was uncanny how Denbo would be able to keep a level head even while dealing with shoplifters or customers who would mess with him. I never thought he would be the one here, the friend said. I would trust him with my life, my house, my kids. After hearing the arguments on each side, Champaign County Judge Randy Rosenbaum ultimately sentenced Denbo to 50 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections, which must be served at 100% time, meaning he cannot have his sentence reduced for good behavior. He has credit for 994 days of time served awaiting trial. Due to Denbo's mental health status, IDOC will also be required to perform a periodic examination of his mental health and provide treatment. The next headline reads, Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation, well-guided, distinguished alum says Jefferson Middle School put her on path to success. This article is by Anthony Zillis and is based out of Champaign. That's A-Z-I-L-I-S at newsgazette.com. That's how you can reach Anthony Zillis. In most cases, Topper Steinman has a difficult time remembering names and faces from his early days as a counselor at Jefferson Middle School. That's Topper Steinman. Jennifer Lansford, though, was no normal seventh grade student when she volunteered to take part in Steinman's peer mediation program called REACH in 1985. She was one of those that stood out and stood out as an academic, he said, and one of those rare humans that, even at that age, that got along with staff and students alike, which I always found kind of fascinating in a way because those can be pretty troublesome times. I'm sure that she probably shared some of those, but I was never aware of any of that, just a great student and a great person. For Lansford, L-A-N-S-F-O-R-D, the adjustment to middle school was especially large. She had just moved to town after her father, David Kuhn, K-U-E-H-N, took a job as a professor of speech and hearing science at the University of Illinois. The move, though, was no issue for Lansford, whose mother, Maxine Kuhn, was a teacher at Robeson Elementary. She immediately fit in, participating in several extracurricular activities, and she always enjoyed school so much that she never wanted to leave the educational setting. Education was important to both parents, and I loved school from the very beginning, said the 1991 Centennial alumna, who will be honored Friday with the Distinguished Alumni Award from the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation. Being a professor is great from my perspective for many reasons, but one of them is, you know, being able to stay in education for an entire career. So both of them were certainly very influential in the career path that I ended up taking. None of those activities, though, would prove as impactful on her life as REACH, R-E-A-C-H, all caps, an acronym, where students would learn to deal with each other and resolve conflicts, Steinman said, without the intervention of adults. Steinman had no way of knowing that by piquing this seventh grader's interest in adolescent conflict resolution, he would wind up making an impact on the field of child development. Lansford credits Steinman's program as the initial influence that drove her to study psychology, followed by George Valentine's AP psychology class at Centennial. She would go on to study developmental psychology at Duke University, spending her summers researching with professors at the University of Illinois. After earning her doctorate degree from the University of Michigan, she returned to Durham, North Carolina, to work at Duke. Now Lansford is a professor and the director of the Center for Child and Family Policy at Duke's Sanford School of Public Policy. Since 2008, she's led a team researching child development and parenting in 9 different countries: China, Colombia, Italy, Jordan, Kenya, the Philippines, Sweden, Thailand, and the United States. Among the topics she studies is the implications of different types of parenting among different cultural contexts. Like her desire to study psychology, her path to international research has roots in Champaign. As a sophomore at Centennial, she visited Tartu, Estonia, as part of an exchange program. At the time, the country was part of the Soviet Union, and Lansford watched with interest as students protested the country's occupiers. The high school students there were much more politically engaged than what I was used to, she said. It was really an interesting experience. During her studies, she's found that outcomes stemming from particular parenting styles depend partially on cultural context, although the importance of a strong relationship between parents and their children is universal. It's important for all kids everywhere to feel loved and accepted by their parents, she said. In some cultures, it's more common for parents to hug and kiss their kids and say, I love you, and those direct displays of affection and love are not as common in other cultural contexts, where it might be more common to do indirect things, like prepare foods in a special way or provide opportunities for education. But regardless of how parents kind of express warmth, it's important for kids to feel loved and accepted by their parents. Lansford still spends significant time traveling around the world for her research, but she also regularly finds the time to make it back to her hometown where her parents and in-laws still live. It's that community and educators like Steinman, she knows, that set her on the course for her successful career. It's just nice to hear back from people that the impact you had was something that mattered and made a difference, Steinman said. So I'll take that pat on the back, but the pats on the back are more of hers than mine, that's for sure. And there's some photographs provided in this article. One is of a woman speaking. She's sitting at a table with a microphone and she has a name plaque in front of her. The caption for that photo is Centennial alumna and Duke professor Jennifer Lansford addresses the United Nations in February on trends affecting families worldwide, technology, demographic shifts, urbanization and migration, and climate change.
There's also a photo of her in a cap and gown from years ago. The caption reads, Jennifer Lansford, that's Lansford, on graduation day in 1991 at Champaign's Centennial High School. All of the photos are provided in this article. And then there's one more of two people talking. It looks like at a table outside. The caption reads, Duke professor Jennifer Lansford Wright on a trip to Greece. There are some mountains, beautiful mountains in the background of that photo. Honor roll. Friday at the iHotel and Conference Center, the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation will honor five distinguished alumni whose achievements, strength of character, and citizenship serve as role models to inspire and challenge today's youth. We'll continue to tell their stories between now and then. First up, Jennifer Lansford, Centennial 1991 Distinguished Alumni Award. So we just read about her. Next up, there's four more people. Donna Tanner Harold, Central 1972 Distinguished Alumni Award. Then Dr. Susan Nagel, N-A-G-E-L-E, from Urbana, class of 73, also receiving a Distinguished Alumni Award. There's Brett Shaw, class of 2007 from Centennial, Local Business Community Impact Award. And lastly, Robert Lewis, who graduated from Urbana in 1964, he will receive the Local Hero Award. We'll read more about those last four award recipients in upcoming weeks in the News Gazette. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso, J-I-M, last name Rosso, R-O-S-S-O-W. We're happy to report that Willard Airport's oft broken down escalator is running smoothly again. It's been a problem for 3 years and a popular Kathy's Mailbag topic, forcing passengers to hoof it from the upper concourse to the main lobby in Savoy. The unit has performed well since repairs, which included replacement of the steps, handrails, bowl gear, and main gearbox, Executive Director Tim Bannon said. We are grateful the issues have been resolved. At the end of 2024, Willard solicited public comment on projects totaling $8.5 million, including renovation of a terminal building that was built in the late 1980s. Bannon said 14 comments were received, including several that were general in nature regarding air service and flight options. All comments were reviewed and considered as we plan for the projects. No changes were made to the projects as a result of the public comment session. Willard is a sponsor of Monday Morning Quarterbacks on WDWS 1400 AM or 93.9 FM, voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart, and Hall of Famer Lauren Tate, wrapping up another season this week. Monday also marked the final live audience radio show of the school year at the Esquire Lounge. Shauna, S-H-A-U-N-A, Green, joining NG Sports Writers. The crowds and guests were among the best since we took the News Gazette sports page to downtown in 2009. Both popular WDWS programs will return in September. And there's a photograph of the escalator. The caption reads, the escalator at Willard Airport was working Sunday. That's from Jim Rosso of the News Gazette. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always email Jim at jrossow@newsgazette.com. Now history. Area history. In 1925, yesterday's township elections produced a decided shakeup on the Champaign County Board of Supervisors and eliminated several of the seasoned veterans and apparently gave Republicans a net gain of 3 members. In 1975, 5 plans for the murder of Judy Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, wife of former Champaign Police Public Defender Larry Kramer, were unveiled by the prosecution's key witness, Charles or Chico Wethington, in testimony. None were carried out. Wethington said he was offered $2,000 by Kramer to murder Kramer's wife, In February of 1974, the state contends the murder was planned so Kramer could collect on life insurance policies Kramer purchased for his wife during a 9-month period prior to the alleged murder date. In 2010, economists foresee enough improvement in the Illinois economy next year that tax receipts will increase for the first time in nearly 3 years. But there's still bad news for Illinois government. Federal aid is expected to decline by nearly $1.5 billion. The next headline reads, actually, let's take a look at our weather forecast for the next few days. Today, 46 degrees, widespread frost in the morning, sunny, northwest winds around 5 miles per hour, overnight mostly clear, gradually becoming mostly cloudy, south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 55, the low is 33. Rain showers 70% likely, south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy, showers 70% likely. Thursday, slightly warmer, high of 60, low of 42, partly sunny, a 40% chance of showers in the afternoon. Friday, the high will be 54, the low is 36, mostly sunny. Saturday, again mostly sunny, the high will be 60, with a low of 34 degrees. As a quick note, this story contains original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you are not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect our community. The next headline reads, "Let your voice be heard. Here are the addresses, phone numbers, and websites of your representatives in Washington, D.C. Senators represent all of Illinois. Representatives represent a district within the state. Our two U.S. senators are Richard Durbin, who can be reached by phone at 202-224-2152. That's 202-224-2152. His website is Durbin, D-U-R-B-I-N, .senate.gov. Next up, U.S. Senator Tammy, T-A-M-M-Y, Duckworth, D-U-C-K-W-O-R-T-H, Worth. The phone number is 202-224-2854. You can reach her again at 202-224-2854. And her website is Duckworth, D-U-C-K-W-O-R-T-H dot Senate dot gov. Then we have three U.S. representatives. The first is Nikki, N-I-K-K-I, Budzinski, B-U-D-Z-I-N-S-K-I. Phone number, 202-225-2371. And she could be reached at budzinski.house.gov, that's budzinski.house.gov. Then there's U.S. Representative Mary Miller, phone number 202-225-5271, that's 202-225-5271. marymiller.house.gov is her website. And lastly, U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, R-O-B-I-N, last name Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. Phone number 202-225-0773. That's 202-225-0773. And the website is robinkelly.house.gov. That's Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 8th, 2025. Thanks for listening. I'll be back to read part two of the News Gazette with you shortly. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.